50 years ago, in the landmark Brown versus the Board of Education decision, the Supreme Court ruled that racially segregated schools could not be considered equal schools. During the oral arguments, a lawyer for South Carolina warned the justices if the court ruled to end school segregation, there'd be no stopping anyone else from demanding similar rights that even people with mental retardation might expect to go to school. The justices ruled the attorney from South Carolina was wrong on the law, but his prediction turned out to be pretty accurate. As part of NPR's series looking at the legacy of the Brown decision, science correspondent Joseph Shapiro explains.
It's George Lidell's birthday. He's 41. He's celebrating at a bowling alley near Washington, D.C. The other men in his group home are here, and friends from his day program. Like George, they are men with mental retardation.
How are you? 41.
Good.
Hey, Jay. What's up, Jay?
At George's side, a woman in a sky blue fisherman's cap joins in the singing.
My name is Daisy Lidell, and I'm the mother of George Lidell.
Daisy Lidell and her son were part of an important but little remembered civil rights lawsuit called Mills versus Board of Education. Daisy Lidell and others sued school officials in Washington, D.C. Those officials had refused to let disabled kids like young George go to school. Back then, disabled children were the only kids in America who were being turned away by public schools, up to 1 million across the country. Officials told Daisy Lidell her son was too retarded to learn. But she knew better. She'd gone to the library and searched for any book that could show her how to teach the young boy things like how to count and tell time.
I could see that he learned things when he was at home because I had go out and get these, education books and stuff. And I tried to train him how to do different things for himself. So I know that he could do these things, and I say what he needed was education, school to help him learn to develop himself and then to learn to take care of himself.
George was 9 when a judge ruled that he did have a right, just like any other child, to go to school. That was 32 years ago. Mills was the first lawsuit in the nation to establish the right of children with disabilities to get an education. A few months earlier, Pennsylvania had settled a similar lawsuit, but that one only applied to kids with mental retardation. It would take another 3 years before Congress, in 1975, passed the nation's first law to make special education mandatory in every state. Attorney Stanley Hare liked to say that for the families of disabled children, the Mills case was our equivalent of Brown versus Board of Education. It was Hare's idea to bring the lawsuit in Washington. In 1970, he just graduated from Yale Law School and came to town to join the heady movement of public interest lawyers. He rented space above an electrical shop, up a rickety flight of stairs, put anti-war posters on the wall, and started seeing clients. He wanted to advocate on behalf of the city's children, but he quickly found out it was disabled ones who most needed his help. Hare died of cancer at the age of 56, but in this radio interview from a decade ago, he explained what he found.
When I first got to Washington, D.C., I was interested as a public interest lawyer in the problems of kids being excluded from school. And I thought it was a problem of discipline and suspension for misbehavior, and I discovered that there were hundreds, even thousands, of children with physical and mental disabilities who were expelled, kicked out of school because their disabilities were not being taken into account.
It was Hare who found Daisy Lidell, her son George, and others who became plaintiffs in the Mills suit. And it was Hare who argued to use Brown as a legal precedent, that just as black children had a right to an equal education, so too did disabled ones. Hare's timing was just right, because in the early 70s, Americans were starting to hear about the horrible conditions in state institutions for the disabled. Parents of severely disabled children faced a dilemma. Without school, their kids often stayed home, and a parent usually had to stay home with them, even if it meant quitting a job. So instead, many parents sent their children to faraway institutions, where it was promised their sons and daughters would be cared for and even get an education. Many of these places had the word school or training school in their name, although in fact very little teaching went on.
The doctor had warned me that it would be bad. It was horrible.
Journalists started sneaking into some of these places, and their eyewitness reports of naked and frightened children stunned Americans.
There was one attendant for perhaps 50 severely and profoundly retarded children. Lying on the floor, naked and smeared with their own feces, they were making a pitiful sound, a kind of mournful wail that it's impossible for me to forget.
Including this report from New York's Willowbrook Training School by a young local television reporter named Geraldo Rivera.
This is what it looked like, this is what it sounded like, but how can I tell you about the way it smelled? It smelled of filth, it smelled of disease, and it smelled of death.
But not every disabled child was sitting at home or was locked away in a state institution. Others were getting an education. Either their parents paid to put them in a private school, or they were lucky enough to live in one of the small number of school districts that did try to educate their disabled children. Tom Hare is a professor at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. He was a top special education official in the Clinton administration. Tom Hare and Stanley Hare, the lawyer in the Mills case, were not related. In fact, they spelled their names differently. But back in the early 1970s, Tom Hare was another recent graduate who wanted to help disabled children. And he met a remarkable educator.
I student taught with Sister Eileen.
At Our Lady of Mercy School in Worcester, Massachusetts.
The nuns there challenged the low expectation assumptions that existed that were very common at the time. I can remember the first grade teacher there, it was called first grade, Sister Eileen, she believed that any child could learn to read. And virtually every kid in her class ultimately learned how to read.
Sister Eileen's belief that children with mental retardation could learn made a lasting impression. Hare got a job at a Massachusetts high school. It was a rare program at the time, one that was mainstreaming retarded children into regular public school. But at night, Hare drove to a state institution several miles away. There he taught children of the same age, residents who were being prepared to leave the institution to move into group homes.
So during the day, I was teaching kids, many of whom, for instance, had Down syndrome, who were doing very, very well, who had stayed in the community, who had been educated fairly well, certainly by standards at that time. After school, I was going to the institution, and I'd see kids with exactly the same disability, Down syndrome, who, for instance, couldn't even talk. And, you know, my kids were reading.
The difference was simply that one set of kids lived with their families and got a real education.
I was shocked at the comparison between similar kids that existed, you know, 10 miles apart. For me, it was an incredible epiphany at my early 20s as a young teacher.
It was an epiphany that many others were having all across the country. Teachers, parents, and lawyers, like Stanley Hare in Washington. These reformers decided they would make two attacks on the system, to close the squalid institutions and to win disabled children a right to an education. The question was where to start. Gunnar Dibwad was a professor at Brandeis University and a key advisor in those early lawsuits. Dibwad died in 2001, but in a taped oral history, he explained how another lawyer convinced reformers that the education suits had to go first.
And very wisely, he decided that we should not worry about the institution as our first step. It was too difficult for judges, for the public, to understand the running of the institution. He said what everybody knows is that children ought to go to school. Let's start with the denial of education for children with mental retardation.
In the Mills case, the city of Washington, D.C. argued it simply did not have the money to teach all disabled children. About one out of five already got some education. There were classes in a tiny building that was once a segregated school for black children, then abandoned after the Brown ruling. And, the city argued, parents could put their sons and daughters in a city-run institution where children got up to 2 hours of instruction per week. Professor Dibwad's expert testimony made a strong impression, especially after Stanley Hare asked him what he made of the city's argument, and Dibwad responded.
To provide for such children or young people 2 hours of instruction per week can only be compared to giving a starving child 2 meals a week. 2 meals a week do not make a diet, and 2 hours of instruction per week do not make an educational program.
In August of 1972, a federal judge ruled in favor of Stanley Hare's clients. The judge quoted the Supreme Court decision in the Brown case about the importance of education in a democratic society. Patricia Wald was another of the attorneys who, along with Stanley Hare, brought the Mills case. She says it made sense that the courts would deal first with education before taking up conditions and institutions, because the earlier Brown decision had created a climate where schools were seen as the first place to correct inequality.
You could have, under a different philosophy, you could have said, well, we want to do something for the developmentally disabled. We'll have more group homes for adults, or we'll have more recreation. But I think that notion that you have to start early so that these children, to the extent that they're capable of it, have some kind of future, that, I think, was a legacy from Brown.
Today, there are still controversies around special education, ones that echo the debates of 3 decades ago. Like the cost, officials in school districts complain they are forced to spend too much of their own budgets on teaching disabled children. Attorney Stanley Hare addressed that issue in a speech in 1995. He quoted from the judge's opinion in the Mills case.
The judge, Joseph Waddy, a federal judge who made the first right to education case, and he said that we must not, and this is very mindful for a time of budget insufficiency, we can't allow budget insufficiencies to be visited more heavily on children with disabilities than others.
There are other questions today about the quality of special education and a debate over segregation, whether disabled kids learn best in separate classes or when they are integrated with non-disabled students. But today, 7 million children are being educated in special education classes across the country. And that part is a success. Joseph Shapiro, NPR News, Washington.
For more information about our series on the legacy of the Brown decision, go to our website at npr.org.